I have nothing to offer but blood, toil, tears, and sweat. We have before us an ordeal of the most grievous kind. You ask, what is our aim? I can answer in one word. Victory. Victory in spite of all terror.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to The Other Club with Tim Tyso, Michael Thiessen, your very own Mr. Thick, and the King of Nuance. It's good to be back at the table with you, Michael, as you sip your coffee, and it's good to be together.
It's lovely. The coffee tastes good. The company is moderate, and the competition is on, right? Again, who is going to win? Please put in your comments. Was Tim Mr. Thick, or was Tim the King of Nuance? Was Mike Mr. Thick or the King of Nuance? Folks, we want to hear back from you.
And I actually need your help, because in our private conversations, I won't tell you, but it's pretty one-sided. So I need the viewers to kind of come to my aid a little bit. And speaking of our viewers and listeners, thank you everybody for your fantastic support during our first few episodes. We've been having a blast, and we're so thankful for your positive feedback and all the support we've been getting. Please help us build this show's popularity and share us out on social media. Share it out with your personal contacts. You can text a link to this show on your phone to 10 friends this week. And that would just be a huge boost to us. And that can be a competition too. Tell us about it in the comments, and we'll give you a shout out on the show. And you can be our honorary guest here at The Other Club, the table for opinions that don't fit in the mainstream. This show is produced by ChristianWeek.org in partnership with the Liberty Coalition Canada.
You know, I love talking about our friends over at RockLink, and some of the ad reads that we prepare are just so sincere. And this one I picked today because it just so reflects my own personal experience. Are you comfortable speaking with your personal advisor about your faith and how your investments should align with biblical principles and truth? Or are you ridiculed for expressing your beliefs and concerned with the direction of our country? We've been talking about our friends over at RockLink Investments, and we've been talking about them for a while now. And one of the main reasons we can recommend their service to our audience is that they share our Christian faith and worldview, and they want to apply that into the sphere of economics. So at RockLink, they are concerned with the same issues that we are. They're willing to have open and honest conversations with you to put you on the right track to achieve your financial goals while mitigating many of the risks surrounding us. So ask yourself, are you getting that level of support and alignment at your current financial institution? Or are you just another brick in the wall, so to speak? So email RockLink at info@rocklink.com or visit them at rocklink.com. That is link with a C. So Tim, what are we talking about today?
Well, we had a great episode last week on nationhood, and that was fun. That was a bit of a heavy lift for us. And so we're jumping a little bit back into some local politics, and we're going to talk about how those come out. This episode is entitled Institutional Entropy. And for those scientifically minded, we are not delving into the hard sciences per se. We're talking about institutional decay and how that works and what we should do about it. And so strap in for this one, because we're going to name names and we're going to get into some of the gritty underbelly of what goes on in our institutions and why we should be concerned. And many of us already are. But we are talking about institutional entropy. And so, Mike, am I going back to you? Do you want to talk about Greg Bonson? Do you want to talk about neutrality? Or how are we going to start this? Because institutions are of great concern. We actually talked about this in church a couple weeks ago, that institutions are good. They're a creative output of mankind to organize our endeavors, to organize challenges and meet our agendas that we want. But we have to be careful in how we build them and what direction they take. So I didn't know if you wanted to kick us off with something intellectual and historic, or how do you want to do that?
Well, let's take our audience back to a conversation that we had yesterday and the day before that's really driving this conversation today. So we have a number of news stories, and those news stories have to do with Christians who are currently under attack within the institutions that they live. So, for example, we have Garrett Van Dorlen, who was disqualified from candidacy for the Conservative Party of Canada in Oxford County. And he was disqualified for what they're saying is not providing all of the information that they wanted from him. Now, that's the given reason. We're going to talk about that. The second story is James Reimer, who is obviously under heat in the NHL for simply not wearing a Pride jersey during warmup. The third story comes from a podcast that I did on Open Mic with the dismissal of the Well Church from the Acts 29 Church Planting Network. Now, these three stories all came across your desk and my desk in the last 2 weeks. And we were trying to figure out what we're going to talk about today. And a theme that you actually came up with, Tim, we were talking about it yesterday, just saying, we were driving by a big church. You and I had just visited a historical school. We'd actually gone back down to Asbury College and Seminary, and we were chatting with individuals there. And the conversation came up about, you know, why is it that it's so hard to battle the breakdown of a good institution? Why is it that it's almost like the moment it's been formed, and of course there are creational institutions like the family and the church and the state, which, you know, you're not reforming those, you're not recreating. But there's other places like schools that start, and there's places like hockey leagues that begin. You know, you can even think of your little local hockey league where, like, you've got your Christian Pond Hockey League up in Barrie. Why is it the moment Christians start something or seek to be influential in an organization that they seem to be battling uphill? And you were the one who provided a really good insight to that, and that's kind of where we need to go with the conversation.
Yeah, so this idea of entropy is that all things tend toward chaos. It's the law, one of the laws of thermodynamics, that a system, because of the way the world works, goes from order to disorder. It's one of the reasons why macroevolution is impossible, because you cannot have a successive build up toward complexity in life forms. You actually have a degradation of complexity. And institutions work the very same way, that your founding documents and your initial launch of a thing, whether it's a political party or a hockey league or a university, begins with the utmost ideals and the best quality people who have the drive and the conviction and the integrity to put it all together and to deliver something great. But of course, over time, we see in general the degradation, the collapse in general, or the corruption of these institutions. And we want to start with, and these are great examples, and I can even think of a couple others, Mike, that maybe we'll get to. Harvard is a fantastic example. We want to talk about Garrett for a minute, because he is ran for the candidacy for the nomination in Oxford County. And he had fantastic support at the grassroots level. He had 2,500 signatures to support his candidacy for the nomination. This is a Conservative Party stronghold in the federal election. It's a guaranteed seat. It had been held for 19 years by the previous Conservative MP. And so it's a contested nomination. And he had fantastic support and was looking like he was going to be able to jump in and contest the next federal election, which is wonderful. He's a personal contact of yours, Mike, and our friend Dr. Joe Boot at the Ezra Institute. He's an affiliation with them, a very strong Christian man. He's young. He's got energy. He's got leadership. And you would think he's got everything the Conservative Party is looking for in a candidate. And so for the national committee to overseeing nominations to disqualify him does raise questions, and which is why we started digging into this. And the official statement from Sarah Fisher, who is a high up executive in the party, said that he failed to disclose all of his social media background. And so you would think, okay, so we did some digging into the policies surrounding candidacy and vetting and eligibility, and we found out that basically the party has the mechanisms to disqualify anybody they want at any time because their language is so broad and basically gives them the power to do so. So what we're looking at is the Conservative Party as an institution and whether it's something that we can work within or whether it's something we need to move on from. So, Mike, what did you think about, let's say, the policies around this and how they got to the point where Garrett was disqualified?
You and I've had a conversation about this. Policies are in place so that people in leadership can actually lead. So it's not absurd that the Conservative Party has policies in place that would allow them to vet and even discard certain candidates. I think it would be too naive to think that that the party doesn't have a vested interest in who they allow run as candidates. Now, the flip side of it is the party is talking about being an open democratic party, a grassroots movement. So that's a problem within their own worldview. But what you and I are getting at right here is that the party is actually just showing its cards. Garrett is, we see from Campaign Life Coalition that Campaign Life Coalition clearly believes that Garrett is being disqualified for his pro-life beliefs. The statement from Campaign Life Coalition literally says in an article by Jeff Gunnarsson, quote, "We believe it was primarily because of Garrett's pro-life beliefs and secondarily because Pierre Poilievre had his own preferred candidate in the race, a former staffer of his," end quote. So the reason why we're talking about this, Tim, is because when this comes up and we look at Garrett and we go, wow, like his track record, his resume, the ground support, a strong conservative riding with a known conservative candidate, it would seem to be like a marriage made in heaven for the Conservative Party. But what's going on right now is the Conservative Party is, and this is why Campaign Life would say such a strong statement, is because they're showing their cards. The party is showing their cards, and there has been institutional entropy. There's been institutional breakdown, and now you're actually seeing the Conservative Party come out and quietly but clearly being pro-abortion. When you look at a candidate like this, I'm going to throw it back to you.
I just want to
go ahead.
I want to just go through this eligibility criteria for the nomination process for the Conservative Party just to undergird your point. And that is that your eligibility, they say, is being a nomination contestant is a privilege rather than a right. Therefore, the party expects a nomination contestant to, and then they list a number of things. And one of them is that you would be forthcoming about any past or current activities that might negatively affect the ability of a nomination contestant to be a credible conservative candidate in a general election or by-election. Such activities include, but are not limited to, having a criminal record or being the subject of allegations of misconduct, whether criminal, sexual, professional, or otherwise, having expressed rules and procedures for candidate nominations. That basically, what they're saying is your past has to be such that we don't have any issues answering for you. And when Sarah Fisher put out the statement that he failed to disclose his social media, what they're saying is, we're not sure all of his opinions expressed in his lifetime are things that we can stand behind. And he's openly pro-life. He campaigned on that. He raised support through that. And to say that he failed to meet eligibility criteria based on not disclosing his opinions or not sufficiently doing so, again, does raise questions, because there's everything about this guy is an ideal candidate in terms of his youthfulness, his energy, his conservative bona fides. He's the right kind of guy. And so you're looking, when you look at these criteria, what it allows the party to do is to say the party's agenda is going to actually drive the eligibility of a candidate rather than the candidate's own views, whether or not they reflect the general population or the grassroots population. And so this is where institutional decay really hits the ground, because the Conservative Party, we know, and it's plain as day, that they have drifted dramatically leftward since 2015 when they lost the election to Justin Trudeau. They officially changed their party policy on same-sex so-called marriage. They have loosened their grasp and their conviction on all of the social conservative issues. And now those have become party policy. So now when a staunchly pro-life and traditional marriage guy runs, now it's running against party policy, whether or not he represents his constituencies.
So Tim, what we're really seeing here is we're really seeing the Conservative Party show their cards, their viewpoint, where they're really going. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. it reveals a breakdown of the party. They're implicitly saying we are pro-abortion by arbitrarily or preferentially disqualifying such a quality candidate who is in his area popularly and happily pro-life. And this leads us to, you know, a similar thing happening in institutional breakdown with our next story, and that's with James Reimer. Now, again, folks, we're trying to stay on a theme. We've picked three stories because there's so many stories that we could have drawn from, but these are three that are important, just talking points. And so James Reimer mm-hmm. is a goaltender for the San Jose Sharks, and TSN reporting on James Reimer just released this statement from Brian Burke after James Reimer refused to wear the Sharks Pride Night warm-up jersey. So Brian Burke says, I quote, "I repeat that I am extremely disappointed. I wish players would understand that the Pride sweaters are about inclusion and welcoming everybody. A player wearing Pride colors or tape isn't endorsing a set of values or enlisting in a cause. He is saying you are welcome here and you are in every single NHL building." So, Tim, here you have the NHL where would regularly in the past have actually had events like Family Night, where we're promoting the nuclear family. It's great that parents are heavily invested in their children, and the league is celebrating that. You know, you've mentioned in the past Military Night. You know, we've gone and we've seen the honoring of the military. This is where we sing our national anthems. You go to an NHL league game, and you'll hear the Canadian national anthem and the American national anthem often played side by side. So we promote our nation's virtues. This is a league that would promote honest and fair play. Now the league, because of the breakdown, because of its entropy, the league is now promoting any and every form of sexuality. So this is a worthwhile talking point, because some people might have said, well, you know what, you know, when it comes down to Garrett and the conservatives, I'm not a politician, my family's not in politics, what does it matter? But your average Canadian or northern state family is like, yeah, I want my kid involved in hockey. And now the leagues that these children are going into are promoting all forms of sexuality, subjugating players, coaches, organizations to this new ideology. And it's a breakdown from where the institution used to be.
So the San Jose Sharks tweeted out last week before their Pride night that 40% of LGBTQ students across the United States avoided locker rooms because they felt uncomfortable or unsafe accessing them. And the idea here is basically that the league is saying, well, we need to make sure that people who live and participate in these deviant sexual lifestyles feel comfortable going anywhere they want without having to abandon or leave behind their sexuality. And so this is very key for sport. The dressing room is a big part of sports culture. And there's lots of reasons why people might be uncomfortable in a dressing room. It might be because of their height. It might be because of they're short. It might be because they're a little bit wider than somebody else or skinnier than somebody else. Or maybe they've got a birthmark on their bum or something. And there's just lots of ways that people say, a locker room's not my favorite place. And so the idea here is the San Jose Sharks are saying, well, if you're a gay person and you don't like going into dressing rooms and it's because you know you're gay, our solution is to make everybody else in the dressing room acknowledge your sexuality, be aware of it, celebrate it, and that's supposed to make a happy environment inside the dressing room, like as if sexualizing it further is going to make everybody else comfortable. And so you can see how when you start promoting things that are objectively evil in the sight of God, as an institution, you run into dramatic problems. And so like we said, you know, people have tried to say, well, if James Reimer didn't agree with the military, you know, he would have no right to sit out during a military celebration. Well, the difference is that the military and the family are good institutions that God has created and ordained. And the so-called LGBTQ community is not a good institution. It's not a good lifestyle. It's not a positive thing. And so you start wavering into those areas, and you immediately, you're demonstrating the rotten fruit of your institution. What the NHL and its directors and communications people should be saying is, look, there are people who don't feel comfortable in dressing rooms, but it's not our job to wave their deviancy flag so that they feel comfortable here. Our institution ought to be promoting what is good and making what is good known and celebrated. And if you want to feel safe in this place, then you should celebrate what is good with us. So we don't believe in a neutral hockey league. We believe in a hockey league that promotes what is good pertaining to its sphere of influence.
Yeah, what we're not saying, everybody here, is that the NHL should stay in their own sports lane. What we're saying is that the institution itself has been corrupted. And it's always a battle to bring virtue back into an institution. Here's one of the reasons why it's a battle. It's because there's a confusion of categories. So when we talk about inclusivity and welcoming, first of all, a lot of that language comes out of wheelchair accessibility language. There was a movement within the sports world that rightly identified that it would be great if people who had trouble getting into places had structures and buildings designed that would allow them to get there. And so then now the left gets a part of this language and they lump everybody together. So now they're promoting a Muslim girl up and right beside a lesbian girl. And then, you know, a kid who could have been identified as a Christian girl. And then, you know, a black kid and a white kid and an effeminate kid and a masculine kid, guys. And so what they do is it's the same thing they do in the abortion debate, is they try to lump everybody into a category, say, welcome everybody, including this small little subsection down here. And then if you go, well, wait a minute, I'm concerned about that little small subsection, they go, no, you're accusing everybody. And so remember, we're not talking – yes, as a believer in the Lord Jesus Christ, we believe that all humans are created with intrinsic value because they have been created. We believe that all ethnicities are from one human race, the race that is from Adam and Eve. There are not multiple races. There is one human race. There's differences because of where we lived and we grew up and we speak different languages, but all of those things can be welcoming. But the opposite is also then not true, that all worldviews are equal, that an institution must promote every worldview except a worldview that would say, wait a minute, I don't agree with that.
Okay, I'm going to jump right in here, Mike, because this is a great opening for what I wanted to say, which was you brought up, why is it a battle to bring it back? And we're going to go on to Chase, and we're going to recap some of that episode that you shot with those guys. But before we do, why is it hard to bring it back? Because in entropy, the one who is pushing toward reform and trying to rebuild the proper foundations of an institution is pushing against the inevitable and
fallen.
Not inevitable, but the
fallen,
but the automatic, the fallen nature of an institution, which is to go toward chaos. And so when you start promoting order again, you've got the whole weight of that institution pushing against you. And I want to point out that James Reimer is only the second NHL player that I know of who said, I'm not putting that jersey on because I cannot endorse an entire lifestyle that flies in the face of creation. It flies in the face of the family. It flies in the face of God's creational order. It's insulting. It's disgusting and it's wrong. And I'm not going to put it on. I'm not going to pretend that this lifestyle is the same as my lifestyle in which I'm married and I have a child with my wife. I'm not going to pretend that. And he's only the second out of about 800 NHL players to actually do this. So it's hard, and the numbers show it.
It's hard because there are everybody not scores in the group says, just go along with this vocal thing because we're all getting paid. We're all happy. We just have to do whatever they say. And just so you know, those are all your words about Reimer's opinion of the situation. His actual words were very gentle. He basically said, I don't want to endorse this lifestyle, but everyone's welcome to play hockey. And this is an area where you and I, when we're articulating this, we were struggling with kind of how do we articulate this. The NHL can promote sexual purity and can promote virtuous language in the locker rooms. The NHL can promote honesty. The NHL can promote kindness and all of these things without going over the top and promoting the LGBTQ agenda. So the NHL can promote honesty without excluding Christian. Muslims and Christians can both play beside each other in the NHL if honesty is promoted. But if honesty is not promoted, nobody can play against each other because the rules fall apart. And so this is where we need the NHL to have a crawl back towards integrity, because they're just giving over to all of this decay. And, you know, they need to be promoting more virtue in the locker rooms with regard to sexual speech and all of these things. Anyways, they can be promoting distancing, not social distancing, but they can promote, you know, the privacy of an individual. Like, you know, like you and I've talked, like you don't want anybody hazing anybody. You don't want players going into the locker room and shoving other guys' heads in the toilets because they're a rookie. They can promote virtue and righteousness without excluding virtually anyone. They're promoting a good environment, but they also don't have to go along and say, hey, every worldview is equal in order for hockey to be a good league to play in.
And if I might, and so liberals come along when they hear conversations like this and they say, oh, why are you guys so obsessed? Like, it's one night where they have to put rainbow tape on their sticks, and why all the fuss? What's the obsession? It's like the gays get one night and you guys have to come along and cry about it. Every other night is about you. And we're saying, no, this is a sign that the institution itself has been corrupted and needs to be reformed. I don't care if it's one night. I don't care if it's 1 hour. I don't care if it's one warm-up. The issue is that the institution itself has signed on to an agenda that is morally driven in a certain direction. And once you see that direction, it doesn't matter how far it's gone. If you're pointing at the direction, you can see where it's going. And if you think that these institutions are just becoming more generally neutral, and that's how it's sold. It's like, well, you know, all the heterosexuals get to play every night and they're comfortable. So we're just going to do one night where we're saying this is true as well. If you think that it's about the league saying, hey, we're just welcoming all perspectives and all social cultural values, all you need to do is look at Colin Kaepernick. Did all the general managers besides the Dallas Cowboys one, I think, who said he was against it, but did everybody in the media crash down on him and say, you know, he's a bigot? When he said police brutality is an issue and I'm going to sit out the national anthem, he was celebrated. I think most of his money comes from his Nike endorsements because he's not a starting quarterback. Nobody cares about his play on the field, but he's widely celebrated for his social stance in the game by sitting out of the national anthem. But when James Reimer does it, where's the celebration? Where's the endorsement deal with Nike or CCM, right? Where are the commercials where he's standing for social justice by promoting the family and by promoting a biblical lifestyle? It's not about the institution saying everybody's welcome and everybody's free to play and express themselves, because of the two players of the 800 who did this, both were lambasted in the media. They were derided by their general managers, and the league is saying there's no place to stand up for your values if they're Christian. That's how you know this is institutional decay, because what is right and good is being pushed out, and what is base and evil is being centered in the direction of the institution.
And this is where the whole myth of neutrality needs again to be discarded.
Yeah.
And why are we talking about this, Tim? We're talking about this because it's the lie. It's a hollow, deceptive lie to say you can just play hockey neutrally. Even the hockey league needs Christianity. Because if the hockey league breaks down in its moral understanding, you can't have a safe locker room. You can't have contract negotiations. You can't have basic rules that apply to all players. And again, that hockey league with a Christian foundation, with a biblical understanding, biblical principles understanding, that can be a very welcoming environment of many other personal beliefs or personal makeups. But you take that basic foundation of the Ten Commandments out of any institution, and you're left always with this statism. So even the NHL has got a moral trajectory. We've talked about this, and right now the moral trajectory is down. And we're going to talk about
I just want to point out to our listeners that Mike just said the NHL needs the Ten Commandments. Yes, we are spreading fascist Christianity across all spheres, and we're just putting that out there. I just wanted to highlight that, yes, we did say that on The Other Club. The NHL needs the Ten Commandments. So does your bank. So does your children. And yeah, we're going to move into this last example.
And again, I feel like once we get to this part of the conversation, I've said it 1,000 times, but this is where gospel influence comes in. Look, I'm reading a book by John Stott called Decisive Issues Facing Christianity Today. Now, this book was published in the UK, and it was published way back in 1973, 1978, 1984. So when we use the word today, not talking about today when he was writing, but look at he gives three basic perspectives of the Christian. He said the first Christian tries to impose his or her views to achieve by force some type of morality, and he uses the Spanish Inquisition as an example, and he uses national prohibition in the United States as an example of imposition. The next thing he says is, then you've got this Christianity that's laissez-faire about all these things. And laissez-faire just, you know, literally means, you know, non-interference by the government. Just, you know, it's kind of a form of libertarianism. But a Christianity that just says, hey, look, like, we throw our hands up. You know, he says to remain silent, inactive when error and evil is being canvassed has very serious consequences. So he says you can't be laissez-faire. So you can't be someone who imposes by force. You can't be someone who is laissez-faire. And he gives the greatest example of laissez-faire Christians as German Christians and German churches failing to speak out against the Nazis in Germany. And the third perspective that he gives is persuasion by argument. Now, I'm going to say that there's a little bit of a false separation between persuasion of argument and imposition. The reality of it is Christians, we are always persuading by argument and the presentation of the gospel, the presentation of scripture, on the basic ground that the human conscience can be treated very carefully. But that is in the area of persuading people towards beliefs. The reality is that when enough people are persuaded, they look at society and they would agree together that lawfulness should be imposed. And that's where Christianity is breaking down right now, because Christians run around and say with John Stott, well, we don't want to impose our values on the NHL. That's so terrible. And then Tim Tyson puts up his hand and says, well, wait a minute. The NHL is totally imposing all forms of sexuality on every coach, player, manager, with these pride nights. And you go, okay, that's not good either. So what do we want the NHL to do? Well, we try to persuade the NHL and people involved in hockey through argument to say, impose good rules. Don't be swayed. Persuade your institutions to change so that then the structure of the institutions, the policies of the institutions, do actually impose morality. Why? Because morality is good. There is not a neutral world that is in between moral and immoral. There's not this neutral world that doesn't count for anything. You're either promoting a moral policy or an immoral policy, and your job is to persuade until there is a lawful imposition. And when I mean lawful, I mean this is not where the church runs around and tries to find everybody who doesn't go to church. This is where the church tries to impose morality, argue for morality so that the state comes, or the institution that you're freely, voluntarily a part of imposes morality so that that institution becomes virtuous. That's why this is such a hard uphill battle.
And and that uphill battle is really at the heart of this conversation, because we're talking about battling the decay of institutions. And you talk about persuasion. James Reimer and Garrett Van Dorland are two men, perfectly or imperfectly, how you want to view it, are engaging in that persuasion. James Reimer saying, now I could just put the jersey on, play the game, because one way or the other, you might say, well, nothing's going to change whether I sit out or not. But you know what? He said, nothing's for sure going to change if I participate. So he said, I'm sitting out for the warm-up, which, by the way, is an important part of the game if you're a goaltender. I don't know if you've ever seen the way their bodies have to move to make a save. He sat out and he said, for sure, nothing's going to change if I do nothing. And so that's where we want to come in and say, hey, these guys are engaged in the battle. And we're going to circle back to the CPC and Garrett Van Dorland and talking about working within these institutions and that persuasion and what you should do. But if you do nothing, you're part of the decay. You're part of the entropy. You're part of the slow decline into immorality and destruction. And I think we should quickly circle back to these guys, Chase and his co-pastor, for a minute, because these are other guys who are working in an institution, the Acts 29 church planting movement. And if you're not a Christian or a church person, take this as an illustrative story, because these are all institutions formed by man that are meant to produce a good result in the earth. And we're seeing how they decay all at this in varying degrees, in varying ways, with varying consequences. But it's happening nonetheless, because these are guys who went to their church planting organization and asked private questions about transparency. They asked private questions about integrity and how leadership was, whether or not leadership was living up to its standards, to its ideals, to its founding documents. And eventually they received a call essentially out of the blue saying, you no longer, you're out of our organization. And just like the political party in Canada, well, they're well within their right to do that. They can disassociate anytime with any person for any reason. But what it demonstrates is an unwillingness to work with somebody who is working toward reform, and that is to rebuild the institution, to help pull the institution back to its founding integrity. The institution is no longer willing to work with people who are trying to push to hold the walls back in. They're saying, we don't want that. That's too uncomfortable. We don't want people swimming against the grain. And this brings me to that point that I brought up yesterday in the truck, Mike, which is when I said, the more corrupt an institution becomes, the easier it gets for men without integrity to rise in its ranks. So entropy is almost a self-fulfilling cycle where when you have slight decay, it allows unprincipled men to get into leadership, which promotes further decay. And then when you have men come along who are reformers who say, I want to help fix this thing, you have men at the top throwing stones down and saying, we don't want to reform. We like the sludgy pace that we're sliding down this polluted river together. And so men with integrity who are trying to reform are not welcome. James Reimer didn't get a standing ovation. He didn't get a raise or a bonus. These guys, Chase and his co-pastor, they didn't get a speaking gig at the next Acts 29 conference because they're trying to reform. They were kicked out and they're blacklisted. And Garrett, same thing, disqualified. So we see how the work of reformation is first a willingness to be kicked out of the very institution you're trying to save. Martin Luther, same thing. When he first posted the 95 Theses, his intention was not to split the Roman Catholic Church. His intention was to reform it. He said, I want to debate these things. I want our theology to get better. I want us to clarify these issues so that we're a more faithful church. And the Roman Catholic Church said, I don't think so. You either take that piece of paper down or you're out. And of course, that's how we got the Protestant split, the big schism in the 1500s. And so it is not an easy task to work upstream from this decay. And there's a lot of Christians in these institutions right now who are saying, I think we need to stay here. I think we need to do work. I think we need to actually work at influencing these institutions. And that's where we want to finish this conversation, Mike. So take us into this this task and where we're at and the questions we need to ask in terms of how are we going to go from here when we acknowledge that these institutions are pretty broken and most of them are run by pragmatists and cowardly people who don't want to be confronted on the decay that they're presiding over.
Yeah. So first, as we transition to application, the story of Chase Davis and Matt Patrick is that their church called The Well, and particularly The Well location Boulder. These guys have been asking some pretty pointed questions about things that would seem to be going against both Acts 29 distinctives and biblical truth. So Acts 29 is a church planting network. I used to be a part of one of these networks. And basically those networks are there to promote and help support. So we've gone over that. If you haven't listened to this episode, go back and download my episode with Chase Davis and Matt Patrick. And the reason why we're bringing this story into this podcast, Tim, is twofold. One, because you and I are being a little bit critical of the church. And so it's good to be critical of the church. Like if we're going to be talking about the NHL and a breakdown, and we're going to talk about the Conservative Party, we might as well admit an example of breakdown within the church for the sake of honesty. And then just full disclosure, everybody, part of the reason why we're including this story is because I am no longer a part of the church planting official network world because of very similar situations with Acts 29 here. There's this institution building going on within the church itself of new networks, of new popular and attractive groups that sometimes you go, I really want to be a part of that. So you go to them, they flourish, they grow, they get exciting. You feel like you're a part of something that's grander than your own local ministry. But those things have the same problem of institutional decay that Tim and I are talking about. And so basically Acts 29 booted these guys out of their network because of some of the very questions that they would have regarding maintaining the integrity of the network. And so that's why we're talking about this particular story. Again, why are we talking about the breakdown of institutionalism, of institutional entropy? And it is for three reasons. Number one, the slippery slope argument has been used within Christendom for years, while the church has negated its responsibility. The idea of, it's not bad enough, so I'm not going to say anything. You know, for those of your listeners, for Tim, myself, how many times? I just heard it again this week. Is that the hill you're willing to die on? So everybody wants to just retreat in the name of what? I don't know. Rather than boldly address these issues. Number two, the reason why we're talking about this is because this is a serious reality for new professionals. There is not a 13-year-old hockey player, Christian hockey player, who is not already facing this in any league, who doesn't have to come to reality that I might one day be making millions of dollars in the NHL and I'm told to put on a jersey or to get out. And if we're not talking about this right now, if we're not girding up our young people to say, I'm going to go into that institution and I'm going to claw it back for Christ, I'm going to claw it back for morality, I am going to count the cost of being a public Christian in that vocation, then what we're left with is what we've seen so rapidly in the last 3 years, and that is everybody just puts up, shuts up, and goes along in order to keep their jobs. The third reason why we're talking about this is because you might have to be the person who actually starts an entirely new institution because Christians aren't safe anywhere else, because other leagues break down. You might have to be the person who starts up the Christian hockey league in your town because all of the other hockey leagues are completely corrupt and they promote everybody to miss church on Sunday. The locker rooms are unsafe and the local LGBT community is forcing and successfully forcing everybody to wear rainbow flags. So that's it. We've had a problem. And even this morning, Tim and I talked to somebody on the phone who said, I just can't believe this is happening to Reimer. So still people are saying, I just can't believe that hockey can't stay in its own lane because they falsely think that everything is neutral. Just this week, we've talked to young professionals who are like, what do I do? Can I go into medicine? Can I go into law? Can I go? And it's a real reality that has to be grappled with because we're losing the generation. And number three, what's even better for people to be talking about, what they should be talking about is, well, we got to go start something good and God's going to bless it. And it might not be as comfortable. It might not be as secure. It might not be as fruitful immediately, but we've actually got to go start an institution. That's why we're talking about this today.
Right. And you're going to get a lot of pushback for going out against the party lines, pardon the pun, but for any institution, you're going to get pushback from the people you thought that were on your own team. And this, I want to take this back to Canadian politics for a minute in the Canadian Conservative Party of Canada, because I hear from people, and I've had personal conversations with people high up in the party who say, this party is the only vehicle by which we're going to make any gains politically in Canada for social conservatism. This is the only way we're going to get it done. So if you want pro-life policies, if you want traditional marriage to return to the to the public square, if you want promotion of the family, if you want a good, solid educational curriculum, or if you want to remove it from state control, which obviously we would advocate as sphere sovereign Christians, if you want those things, we've got to do it with this party. And I remember calling my MP when I lived in near Ottawa in my riding, and I said, "Hey, you say you're pro-life. Like, when's the last time you introduced a bill to outlaw abortion?" And the person on the phone, this was a 20-year veteran, the assistant, she said, "Well, he did introduce a private member's bill, whatever the year was, and it was 7 years prior to the phone call that I was making." And my question was, well, time to send one again. It's time to table one again. Because what these people are saying is there's good pro-life people. There's good social conservatives in the party. And if we leave this party, then we'll lose everything. We'll lose any platform we have. And my question is, you're there. You have the institutional clout. You have the personal conviction. What are you doing? So many Christians have been fooled into the fact that, well, hey, if you're James Reimer, hey, what good are you if you get cut from the team? What good are you in terms of spreading, you know, the gospel, or what good are you at reforming the NHL if you just get cut from the team and then you're kicked out? And what good are you if you quit the Conservative Party and then you can do nothing? At least if you're there, then you can XYZ. And all the while, it's an excuse to do nothing. It's an excuse to hold on to your salary, to hold on to your reputation, to hold on to your travel budget, because it's really nice.
If you're there, the you Oxford can do County X, seat, Y, yeah. Z, except for Z, and except for Y, and except for X.
But there's something in there that you can, you know, if you want to squeeze something in there,
there might be a little stub. There might be a little like a little sub footnote addendum. Like L
that you can add to an inter-caucus meeting where there's no media, there's no exposure, there's no minutes, and it's all in confidentiality. And you know what? Good for Garrett for running for the nomination. But when your party demonstrates to you that it is not willing to be reformed, it is not willing to entertain a true pro-life candidate, it is not willing to entertain socially conservative values, which are family, independence, individual responsibility, the promotion of true religion, if it's not interested in any of those things, and the only one that's left that Pierre Poilievre and the party can still talk about is so-called fiscal responsibility, but we're miles from that anyway. If it's not willing to entertain any of those things, then what is the argument for continuing along in the institution? And this is where I'd move to Mike's third point, which is it's time to do something new. It is time to do something new. And we are at that crux in this generation. I believe in Stephen Harper's time, where he had three mandates in a row, that was the time to bring pro-life legislation forward. They didn't do it. They were unwilling to do it because it was coalition politics. It was, I can bring a big tent together, and if we have power, then we can do good. They got the power. They did not do the good that they were supposedly representing. Why? Because institutional entropy. The work of reformation is not automatic. You just simply being there at a meeting, keeping your hands under your seat and your mouth closed, you are contributing to entropy. Unless you are actively pushing in the opposite direction, bringing reformational thinking, bringing actual policy ideas and persuasion and resistance to that decay, then you're no different than the people promoting the decay. And that's the hard truth that we haven't really grasped yet.
So in order to wrap all of this up, Tim, I want to play a game. We're gonna go through each institution we've talked about. So we're gonna go through Conservative Party, we're gonna go through the NHL, and we're gonna go through Acts 29
Church.
You get to pick. Are you taking the side? We're just trying to give people options. So some people are gonna feel called to affect change. Other people are going to be feel called to start something new. What are you picking?
I'm going start something new.
Here we go. So I'm just going to say the category And then I'm going to go with three things that you can do to work within it. And then okay. I'm going to pass to you. And you're like, here's what you would do if you're starting something new. Okay.
And we'll go generally. Like, it doesn't have to be Acts 29 and InShell and the CPC party.
No, it has to be specific.
Politics. Okay. Well, then, okay. Then fair
enough. All right, here we go.
Okay, go.
So Conservative Party, if you're feeling called to work within it, what do you do? So my three pieces of advice, which are fairly common on this podcast, the one is you need to double down with what you mean. So that means that if you are being accused of something, you need to say, of course, I understand exactly what I'm doing and I want the party to change. And stop just playing the numbers game. Go hard until they kick you out. Number two, you need to regain ground in the Conservative Party. The Conservative Party is, like Tim just said, it's not even conservative anymore in any sense of the word. You need to continue to loudly promote candidates that are taking a stand on conservative issues. And so, for example, with Garrett, everybody needs to be loud. Everybody within the Conservative Party needs to be loud about Garrett's disqualification. If you're going to work with the party, don't be quiet about this. Get loud specifically about Garrett right now. You can go to the conservative.ca. I'm going to the website right now. It is just conservative.ca. You can click on any of the national council members and you can email them directly. You should be doing that right now if you're going to work with that party.
I'm still going to do that after this show, Mike, even though I think that it should abandoned. I am going
to
do that.
Because you and I are taking actual positions that maybe might be opposite to each other. I want to tear it down and go do something new and you might be willing to work with it. Okay.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Then number three is you've got to win the consciousness of voters to understand the decay of the party. You actually have to talk about the decay of the party so that if voters are going to partner with you to work on reform, they're not being duped into a bait and switch.
Right.
You actually have, and it might be a battle, but you've got to be loud and you have got to be passionate so that the national chairman of the board, like Robert Bathison, just can't dismiss you. You cannot keep propping up the Conservative Party as actual conservatives. You've got to say, I'm working with the mechanism that is here. They're not conservative. We're going to bring them back. You get involved. Those are the three things that I would suggest if you're going to work with the conservatives. If you're going to start something new, Tim, go ahead.
Well, obviously, I want to draw attention to Maxime Bernier, who ran for leadership and only lost by 1% to Andrew Scheer. And working high up in that party, he said this party can't be pulled back. They're not willing to negotiate on some of the basic principles of conservatism. So he went and started a libertarian party. So that would be an example where obviously a high-profile politician went out and garnered a lot of support. He pulled in, was it 8% of the federal vote in the last election? Like, very good showing for it. So start a new party and support a new party.
Yeah. How you said, shout out to Maxime Bernier. You don't need to go start something new. The PPC are already starting it and Max is already talking like a conservative. Right. Like he's refining his libertarian language to reflect conservatism as much. Back to you.
Yeah. And that's the thing. So go support a new party. And a lot of conservatives are not willing to do this. And it's maddening when they retreat to this. We did a whole episode on this. They retreat to this abusive party that says, oh, social conservatives, you need us. You'll never do anything without us. And we say, no, we're going to be principled conservatives. And then when election time comes, we know they're going to be our sugar daddy. And it's the only way we can get blue shirts in there. Well, Maxime Bernier, go support him. Go vote for him. And like Mike pointed out earlier, recognize that from day one, you're going to have to work to pull that party, even Max, toward a conservative vision. And we're happy to report he is sounding more conservative than he did 2 years ago. So support a new party, be bold with your money too. Like, change your membership, change your donation base, go and do something new and support something new. And I mean, that's pretty basic. Anybody can do that at any given time. So that's available to all of us. Christian Heritage Party, also very good. And be involved. Like, don't just leave it to the momentum of a candidate. Be involved. If you vote for a candidate, voice your opinion, voice your displeasure with policies and your support for others, so that there is a responsiveness in the process. So yeah, I'm all for work with something new on that one.
Okay. So the NHL, what would I say to someone who is working within the institution? So number one, I'm not talking about children and parents right now. I'm talking about individuals who are actually employed within the NHL or influencers of that. And the one point would be to stop being deceived about the need for your voice in that place. Like, you know, we need more James Reimers. We need Christians to speak up and to present the need for the Christian worldview to be in that place. Number two, if you are getting involved in hockey more broadly, there has to be an immediate understanding that this can be an idol, and families ought to be sitting down very seriously about boundaries around how the hockey culture will or will not, you know, professional sports, all of them, will or may not dictate to the family. And thirdly, I think we need to stop idolizing athletes so highly with our young adults. So there you go. If you're going to stay in it, give the whole thing a dose of reality while you're in it, if until they kick you out. Start.
So you got to go outside of NHL. So I'm
really,
going outside
I
of NHL
literally
too.
Said the NHL, yes, and then did. I said other sports. I it was two words.
Exactly. Right. So, okay, that's my permission. Sports are a big thing. So if you're, I am going outside of the NHL because this is where parents can really have a an impact. There are this institutional decay is happening at the children's level. You are having girls' soccer teams carry out the trans flag onto the field before they play. You are having educational days and you're having celebration days, and this is going on at your level. If you are a parent and your answer is, well, sports means a lot to my kid. Sports means a lot to my daughter. She shows a lot of promise in track and field. She shows a lot of, he shows a lot of potential in hockey. If I go compromise that for my kid, will never forgive me. If you talk to, as an illustration, if you talk to children of parents in the during the communist era who got their kids top level education by conforming to the state party, to the Stalinist party, by wearing the red star, their children hate them for failing to stand up against the regime. So if you're a parent, you need to be willing to walk away. You need to be willing to stand up and say, no, my kid's not participating. No, my kid will not carry that flag out. No, my kid will not wear that jersey. Train a James Reiber today so that by the time they get to that high level, it's a no-brainer. I will not compromise my beliefs for my athletic career or any career for that matter. So again, be willing to walk away and start something new. And, you know, Trail Life here in the United States is a great example where a bunch of Eagle Scouts nationally said, we're done with scouting USA. We're done with their policies. We're done with their approval of homosexuality, and they've welcomed girls into the scout program. We're going to go start something new. So they kicked off Trail Life, which is a Christian expression of that outdoor lifestyle. And so I be willing to walk away from the prestige and the clout of an institution if it is driving a wedge between you and what is fundamental to you, which is your relationship and expression of faith in God Almighty. So third one.
No, I think you got it. Like, leagues are just leagues, and people are running leagues to make some money and to promote their value. So go start go start a good league. Sports are about recreation. They're not really about professionalism. That's the biggest confusion most people have. You get your kids into sports so that they're active. They learn the value of working as a team. They learn the value of rules. And so if you're in a league that is promoting boys to be girls, that's a rule that your children can't understand, that because it's a terrible rule. Okay, let's go to the third institution. I thought when you said third one, Tim, you were to publicly rebuke me, because that helps with the competition. When you privately text me, true. It's fine, but if you really want to correct me in order to get out of certain labels,
I don't
want to
score points on you. I don't want to
score points
on you.
It's very kind that you did that. So third institution, church institution. So yeah. Working within it. So I tweeted out today, stand now or divide later. Like if you're within a denomination that is wavering on orthodoxy or orthopraxy, you might as well speak up now and try to call people back. And rather than just waiting for 20 years for the whole thing to be a dumpster fire, and you have to divide anyways. We can go through denomination after historical denomination that started with a righteous fervor that ended with liberalism. And so basically, if you're going to work within it, don't get captivated into the celebrity mentality and the idea of just building your own kingdom. Try to speak up about important issues, even when it's unpopular. Number two, positioning yourself doesn't really work. And that's just from personal experience. You know, a lot of people say, well, look, once I raise to the ranks, if I'm just faithful down here, I'll rise up to the ranks within the denomination. That just doesn't work. There's just too much personal experience. So if that's been your plan, you need to realize that it's probably better just to be outspoken and be the prophet in the room now than to try to buy your time. And then number three, within the church world, you always have scripture. And if you're going to work to change within an organization, you have to be deeply rooted in scripture and a biblical hermeneutic that is historical and grammatical, all of those things. You're going to be encouraged to walk away from scripture in so many different situations. If you're going to stay in and reform, your call has to be back to redemptive scripture.
I, for my position, go to 2 Kings 22, and a character that we admire is King Josiah, who, when he takes the office of the king, Hilkiah the high priest said to Shaphan the secretary, "I have found the book of the law in the house of the Lord." It had been lost for a generation. And it says, when the king heard the words of the book of the law, he tore his clothes. And the king commanded Hilkiah the high priest and the priests of the second order and the keepers of the threshold to bring out of the temple of the Lord the vessels made for Baal, for Asherah, and for the host of heaven. And he burned them outside Jerusalem in the fields of Kidron and carried their ashes to Bethel. So this is a model for reform that that a lot of Christians have failed to really implement in any meaningful way. And this takes place as the priesthood of believers in all areas of life. We have failed to take out the idols, burn them, and carry the ashes back to the Lord as a plunder of victory. And so when it comes to church organizations, when they are unwilling to address the idolatry, when they're unwilling to take radical action against idolatry and sin, or unwilling to even entertain the idea that it is sin or idolatry, then you walk away or you help burn it. But this is so critical in the institution of the church, and it takes a special level of being called a radical and an extremist, because what we've come to value is protecting the status quo, especially the social status quo. And impoliteness and extremism is just not viewed as godly. But of course, we see in the scripture the opposite, that when we take radical action against evils and compromise, that it's blessed by God. So get out there and do that for the Lord. Partner with people, especially in if you're looking to start something new in the church, partner with people who are trustworthy, partner with people who are sincere, who are biblical, who have an understanding of the gospel, and who have a commitment to something to actually build, because none of this is easy. Starting new institutions is hard. Mike and I have both been doing it the last few years, and there are hurdles. There are organizational hurdles. There are financial hurdles. There are reputational hurdles. There are competitive hurdles. There are all kinds of ways that institution building gets stopped. But it's worth doing. And this is a golden age for new institutional growth. So that's where we're at. Institutional decay. I'm going to give the final word to you, Mike, as you wrap this up, and then we'll say goodbye to our listeners. But be a builder, be a person of courage, be a James Reimer, be one who is willing to discern between good and evil and say, I'm either going to stay and work with it with conviction and with strategy, or I'm going to go out altogether and put those convictions and strategies into something new. But either way, you've got to have them if you want to see reform and change and build and reverse that decay that we see all around us in our culture today.
My final word would just be to make a slight edit to that last statement. If you're going to stay in it, not with conviction and strategy, stay in it with conviction and integrity. And the strategy will then unfold itself. Because you and I've talked enough about people selling out because they overthink rather than being integrity. Guys, look, you might be a listener and saying, man, Mike, Tim, you guys talk about a lot of stuff. It always seems kind of very intense. We're at an intense time, and we are trying to address some like explosive issues. So we literally just said that the yes. NHL needs Christ. I can't think of a more explosive statement that will harbor more hostility from people who want to reject the Lord God. And so just take the thoughts and advice that we're giving and internalize this and work with your children to really change these subtle different approaches to the last 30 years. I think that would be my final word. The last 30 years, I have watched with my own eyes the same argument come up time and time again, and the same cultural institutional decline come up again and again. And sitting in the corner, putting up your hand, saying, but when are we going to do something, has always been problematic because people don't actually believe in persuasive argumentation that is built on the word of God rather than human reason in order to change these things. We just want comfort. And we are hoping that we will build some things that will last and be wonderful. And in 100 years, people will celebrate them, but that's not going to be easy. Thanks for listening.
And by the way, well, hang on. And actually, I am going to say goodbye. Because let us not forget that the other club was started by somebody who was rejected from the club. And so, Winston, this episode is for you. And join us next Wednesday on the other club for opinions not welcome
in the club.
polite company. We appreciate your joining us. We'll see you next Wednesday. Thanks, everybody.
Friends, we're posting new content multiple times every week throughout our various shows on this channel. So you're going to want to subscribe to it and hit that notification bell. That way you stay up to date with everything that we're releasing here with the Liberty Coalition Canada.